In studio, we have Shanaz Matthews, the director of the UCT's Children's Institute in Cape Town. I'll be chatting to her about the children and COVID-19 advocacy briefs, a series of articles about how COVID has affected children's healthcare, education, early childhood development, nutrition, mental health, and exposure to violence. She'll be talking about her focus in these briefs, which was on violence and injury. Welcome to the show, Shanaz. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And really great to be here with you today.
Can you please tell us more about yourself and your work at the Children's Institute?
As you said at the start, I'm the director of the Children's Institute, and I was just telling you as we started, we met each other earlier, that I actually worked at the Red Cross Children's Hospital for 10 years prior, quite a long time ago. And so Red Cross Hospital is quite dear to me. But talking about the Children's Institute, we're located at the University of Cape Town within the Health Sciences Faculty. And we a child policy research unit with a particular focus looking at ensuring that children's rights are realized for all children in South Africa. We have a particular focus looking at poverty and inequality, because that's one of the major challenges affecting children in South Africa. We also look at early childhood development, particularly because access to early childhood education secures long-term outcomes for children. And then the other area that we focus on, and it's one of the big challenges facing children in South Africa, is violence across the life course of children. We do research, and we use our research to influence both policy and legislation. So for instance, I used my research on violence to write a submission to the Constitutional Court around why corporal punishment needs to be legislated against in South Africa, and we won the case in the Constitutional Court in 2019, and that's a big win for South Africa's children. The other area of work we also do is we look at how we can improve programs. So we use our research to work with NGOs and CBOs in the community to influence both the ways programs are being delivered, as well as with government, to see that government programs are delivered with a child-centered focus. So that's a little bit about the Children's Institute.
It is said that children are at a lower risk of getting COVID-19. So why do you think it is important to look at how COVID-19 has affected children?
I think really early on in the pandemic, we were very aware that all our responses when we were looking at COVID, because children were, as you said, you know, not as affected as adults, we were quite clear that we have to look at the impact of COVID on children as well, because all governments' programs and plans were excluding thinking about how it might impact on children. And what we have seen is that the children have been collateral damage in the pandemic. What I mean by that is that if you think about in hard lockdown, you had so many families who were struggling because they couldn't get to work, so they weren't getting an income. And we saw rising numbers of unemployment. We saw rising numbers of food insecurity, meaning children were going hungry. And at a time when schools were also closed. So although children weren't at increased risk of getting COVID, they were in fact feeling the effects of COVID in very different ways at home and in their communities. And therefore, our call was really for government in their policies and in their programs to start thinking about how you also consider the impact of COVID on children, not just healthcare, because what we were seeing is that it was certainly more difficult for children to access healthcare. So children who were needing to access routine healthcare were not able to access clinics. Immunizations were being delayed, surgeries were being delayed, so there were huge impact on children that we didn't consider early on.
How has COVID-19 and the lockdown impacted children with regards to violence and injury?
So that's an area that I work in. And at the start of the pandemic, we were very aware that lockdown and level 5 lockdown in particular could have a dramatic impact on levels of violence, as we learned from other countries. And our concern was certainly that with increased levels of stress in the household, and we know South Africa has incredibly high levels of domestic violence. We know that about one in nearly 5 children experience violence in the home, and similarly women experience intimate partner violence. And for that reason, when with level 5 lockdown, we were particularly worried that when stress levels are increasing, when you're confined to small spaces, that the stress levels increases and therefore the conflict in households would increase as well. What we do know also is that social work services were not deemed as essential services. Children were not going to school, so the support systems to support children who were in crisis were certainly not there. And services had to find innovative ways to get to children and to get them to access their services. So although our numbers are showing us an increase in levels of violence during the time, we feel that because children were not able to access those services, it is very much a hidden problem. But from other countries, we certainly learn that innovative ways to get children and women particularly to report violence in the home has shown an increase in numbers of violence. So we see this from call centres, so your Childline has seen an increase in numbers, but actual services, so if we look at the numbers of children coming into Red Cross Hospital and reporting child abuse, there was a decrease for the lockdown, hard lockdown periods. And then thereafter, around about September, October, it started returning to normal levels. We also know that schools are important sources of support for children. And when children are not able to go to school, they're just not able to report what's happening to them. And it does mean that abuse goes unreported during that period.
What long-term effects could this have for children?
That's my biggest concern, is the long-term effects, because what we have seen is, as I've said, you know, kind of a hidden form of violence that children have been exposed to. And it's not just violence, it's other. So children have experienced loss of grandparents or parents or important adults in their life. And all of this has an enormous impact on children's mental health. It's one of the most neglected areas where we don't have services out there that provide children with the necessary support. My big concern is that already in South Africa, we have really high levels of trauma. And when we don't deal with the effects of something like a pandemic or loss in the family or grief, what we do find is that you internalize these problems. And for children, it's very hard, and it depends on the developmental phase of the child, how they cope with it. But if they're not given the appropriate support systems, it can have a long-term negative outcome in terms of their mental health adjustment, as well as outcomes in schools. And that has a long-term effect on children's outcomes. So I am very worried. We've got to be very conscious of how we support children over the next couple of years. I think one of the things we're not giving attention to is children who've lost important adults in their lives. And we've got to be ensuring that those children are getting the necessary support to cope over the next couple of years and for them to be adjusting when they're back at school. And school has changed significantly, and needing to adjust to all of this as well has had an impact on children.
What are the solutions for this problem, and how can we make better support for children moving forward?
I think I've started talking about some of the support that children are needing, but I do think, you know, it isn't just government's responsibility to ensure that children are given the necessary support. I think it's really critical that we think about integrated support systems where support is delivered within communities, where you've got your schools, your healthcare, your social services all working together to provide optimal care for children to ensure their well-being. And when I talk about well-being, I'm also talking about thinking about children across their life course, because the concern is certainly that if you've had high levels of poverty and food insecurity early on, for particularly young children, you're going to have a problem with stunting. You're going to have children who's malnourished. So that's one of the concerns, is that we pick those children up early in order for them to be in provided with the necessary nutritional support. You've got to think about children who are accessing ECD centres and how ECD practitioners can provide children with the necessary support. So there's a whole area of work that needs to be thought about across the life course of the child that's integrated into spaces where children are currently attending. But it also needs to be thought about in a way that's integrated, where it goes to spaces where children frequent. And because I think part of the problem is that often services are too far away and not accessible to children in our communities.
Today our theme is Career Day. We are talking about different careers. What is it like to be the director of the Children's Institute?
Well, I think I've got to go back to, I started by saying that I worked at the Children's Hospital for 10 years, and that was at the start of my career, and I worked as a social worker working in the oncology unit here at the hospital. So I really enjoyed working with children and their families and getting children to understand about their illness and for them to really have a full and holistic understanding of what was happening to them. I've moved over the years, and I think in terms of career pathing, so having worked as a social worker and then training as a public health researcher has meant that I've understood and have always integrated what I've learned in terms of the needs of children and families on the ground into what needs to be in policy and practice. And I think the important part about career pathing is often you start in a career not knowing where you will end up being. But I think it's really important to follow one's passion. And for me, the passion is to try and make a difference in the lives of children and families in South Africa. And although I no longer work with children hands-on, I still think the work I do at a policy level and thinking about programs always have children at the center of it. And I think that's really critical, that one has to follow your dream and follow your passion and be happy and enjoy what you do and do it with, if you get up every day, it has to make you feel excited about the work you do. So I can tell you that I've worked now for how long? And I'm probably going to tell you a little bit about my age, probably about 35 years. So I've worked for 35 years and I still enjoy doing what I do on a daily basis. And I think that's really critical, that one has to find what you enjoy doing.
Is there anything else you would like to say?
I really think it's important for all our young people out there and parents to understand that we all have a role to play in ensuring that children are healthy and happy. And we've got to be listening to our children and we've got to actively engage with them to make a difference in their lives. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to have you. Okay, so that's the interview, and thank you for joining us today.
Lovely being here today.